I think just people want people don't want to I don't think anybody wants people to forget why we're over here in the first place. And again, I think that's because, you know, this area here is where the terrorism was actually sponsored. So we don't want to leave it in a condition where that type of environment could be fostered again. And that's a pretty difficult thing to do, I think, given the situation over in Pakistan and Afghanistan. So it's one of the things I think that drives us to make sure that we're doing 100%, so we leave a very capable police and an army here, something that Afghanistan has not had for a long time, because that's really what we're doing, is we're trying to build security and justice for the society here. I was in a meeting in Sarajevo, and again, there are people running by, running into the operations center. So we walked into the operations center to see what was going on. Our meeting just kind of ended. I think I went through that already. Well, you know, I think a lot of this, you know, some of it gets softened through the lens of history. You know, if you talk to Pearl Harbor survivors, if you talk to people that were, you know, young teenagers or even young adults around Pearl Harbor, it was a pretty big blow. And I think 9/11 was the same thing. It really kind of shook the foundation of a lot of us, because I honestly believe that many of us had this feeling that America was invincible. And I think that just kind of changed a lot of people's perceptions of their own individual safety and security. I'm not sure how old you were or if you remember it at all, but it was I mean, I was number one, I was really I wanted the people that perpetrated that crime to really be brought to justice. And if I don't know if you remember it, but I mean, there was, you want to talk about binding America together. That's exactly what happened after 9/11. There was not too many dissenters. There were one or two people that would pop up on the news from time to time, but I mean, it was a coalition effort. The world was kind of united against them. And so part of that 10th anniversary is to not forget that. And really, it's extremism that we're fighting, and not just Islamic extremism, but it's extremism everywhere that can drive people to do horrendous things like that, that we have to remain vigilant against, not only in our country, but kind of throughout the world as well. So I think 9/11 is a good time to reflect on that. And really also, you know, from my own standpoint, it's not just the service members, but also their families that have to sacrifice. I have six children, and I've spent a lot of time away from them, and two are in college right now. So I would like more people to remember that that there's service members sacrificing, but there's also family members sacrificing as well. You know, that's a hard thing to say, because you know, I know with the recent demise of Osama bin Laden, and then his number three, who became number two operative, it's easy to say, yeah, okay, we're done. I think there's a larger problem out there for us to resolve, and it's not going to be resolved just through the military. I think that we're a critical component of it, but I also think, by the same token, that there's other elements that have to be addressed throughout the world. And whether it has to do with economics or actual political stability inside of other countries, and then even just a general awareness of basic fundamental human rights that can't be violated throughout the world, you know, those are areas that have to be addressed along with it. And you know, I think also a lot of it has to come back to the message that's been sent, that you know, if you harbor terrorists, regardless of who they strike out after, I think it's incumbent upon the free world to make sure that there's no sanctuaries like this that they can hide and freely operate and plan to do future attacks from. Well, I will tell you, a lot of the soldiers that I served with in Iraq, because I was in Iraq for the initial invasion, many of them, especially the junior soldiers, and even some of the officers too, joined because of 9/11. And I remember one young man in particular. He was 32 years old. He was a professional welder, and he joined because it was the right thing to do. That's what he told me. And another soldier I met later on when I was a squadron commander, he had a scar on his head, and nobody really ever asked him about it, but finally somebody did, and it turns out that he was actually a professional bull rider, and had basically won a couple of $1 million on the bull riding circuit, but decided to join the National Guard because, again, he felt it was the right thing to do. And when you actually meet somebody like that, that is doing it for just outright patriotism and nothing else, what it does is it recharges you as a military leader. Because I've made the choice to be a professional military officer, so you know, questioning my service is really, it's not a question. I mean, I've decided this is what I'm going to do. This is my career. But for a young man like that to just basically put his life on hold to say, no, this is the right thing to do. And some of them serve for 3-5 years and then they get out and they go back to their civilian life and they're done. And that's a powerful thing to be around and to serve with. As a military officer, it's very inspiring to want to try to do your best to serve those young men that make the choice like that. Yeah, actually something did. When I was in ROTC at Central Michigan, there was the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up on launch. And I remember Chuck Donnell, good friend of mine, he's on the National Security Council staff right now. We were sitting there and the Sergeant Major walked in, Sergeant Major Earl, and said, well, the Space Shuttle Challenger just blew up. And Chuck and I walked over immediately to the student union, to the student center in the middle of campus, and we walked downstairs, and on a big screen TV they were replaying it, and it was absolute dead silence. And it was the same kind of eerie silence that I felt when I was in that operations center in Bosnia, where people are just literally, they're speechless. And you can't even hear people breathing because they're just, I think they're trying to mentally process it all. And so the Challenger disaster was kind of the same thing along the same vein, 1986 when that happened, that I could only imagine it was a similar thing. And reading some of the stories that my officers wrote, it was interesting. One of my lieutenants here played football at West Point. He was a ninth grader when 9/11 happened, and he wrote basically the story about how he and his fellow students were arguing with the teacher to turn it on. Something's happened. Turn on the TV. Something's happened. And the teacher was kind of like, no, this is just a trick to get us, you know, off track and not start class kind of thing. And he's like, no, really, something happened. So then when the teacher did turn it on, he same kind of eerie silence. And he describes it in this article that he wrote. It's very, very interesting to me that I would imagine, I could only imagine at CMU at the time, probably the same thing occurred. Well, I've actually served with I've served with officers and other soldiers who actually lost people on 9/11, and I think when you meet one of those individuals, it's really hard to not understand a certain amount of anger that they have inside of them, and a little bit more intensity and drive in what they do. One person individually, his uncle was a firefighter on 9/11 and was killed in the World Trade collapse. And I remember part of it was we dedicated some things to the memory of his uncle, and I don't remember exactly which company he was with and the New York Fire Department. But, you know, it's moments like that that I think it puts a little bit more in perspective of what we're doing and why we're doing it here. And I've also met a number of officers. And in my recent assignment, I was also in the Pentagon quite frequently. And I would go to that spot. And I actually had the opportunity to meet General Maud, Lieutenant General Maud, who was a senior officer killed on 9/11 in that Pentagon attack. And I met him the month before he actually came to Bosnia to visit us. So when you have I walked the halls of the Pentagon and actually went to the area that was destroyed. And you see the monument that's there and the memorial and names that are inscribed in the memory book there where they have a memorial dedicated to him. And it's really, it kind of clears your mind, and makes you think. One, incredible amount of sacrifice on a lot of people's part right now in this mission that we're in. But I do believe it's for the right reasons and the right cause. And I think that our mission here right now to leave the Afghanis capable of defending themselves and providing security and justice in their own society is the right thing to do. Well, one, I don't think that you can absolutely pin a date on this and say we are done on this date. I think that's short-sighted. I would say that, you know, there are going to be continued setbacks and, unfortunately, probably some continued casualties even as we continue to withdraw. Just because we take out 10,000 troops, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be some other service members, regrettably, that that will be killed. It's still a very kinetic environment here along the border. At some point, I think the United States is going to have to withdraw here and turn the fight over to the Afghanis. And I do believe that they are capable of handling the fight here. I think what they're probably going to need is some continued economic support and development. And some of that is going to be, again, have to be shouldered by the Afghanis, but there's also, you know, a portion of the rest of the world that's going to have to, you know, continue to support here. And, you know, that's also one of the things that's not known. Even though there's 34 nations that contribute troops into Afghanistan right now, or 34 nations that have signed up to contribute troops to varying degrees, there's also a significant number of countries that provide monetary support. Japan is one of the single largest donors here in Afghanistan, even though they don't have any troops here. So I think oftentimes people forget about that there still is an international commitment. It's not the United States here by itself. And as long as we continue with that international commitment, I think we'll see continued success here. Well, you know, one of the things I wrote about was actually the binding nature that 9/11 had, and, you know, some of the problems that we're facing right now, politically, the gridlock that's in Washington, you know, some of the economic problems. But I think it's that unity that we drove out of a crisis event that should bring Americans together to resolve their problems or face challenges. And we've done it throughout our history. You know, this is not the first time we've had a crisis. I mean, you can go back, 100 or so years. We had the Maine incident in Havana Harbor. We had Pearl Harbor. You know, there's been times that Americans are galvanized together for resolute and correct reasons. And I think that's really what we need to look at. The fact that some people choose to ignore it because of a personal reason, through disassociation of, I don't want to remember the negative feelings. I mean, I can certainly understand that. Nobody wants people to revisit something that, you know, causes them, you know, mental trauma like that. But again, I think it's something that we can't forget. I don't believe we should live in fear, but we should also, you know, remember, you know, how that happened and why it happened and prevent something like that from happening again. And, you know, the hard thing with prevention is you never really know that you're successful unless it doesn't happen. And so really, in reality, you don't know that you are being successful. You just know that something bad hasn't happened again. And we've had several close calls that have been either, you know, operator error or good law enforcement and good intelligence work that has stopped some of these events from happening. And I think all the open source intelligence confirms that that Al-Qaeda and some of these senior leaders were still interested in doing significant harm or attacks to the United States and Western targets. And again, so I don't think it's a threat that we can ignore or take lightly. No, I you know, the one thing that that I hear over here sometimes from soldiers is they feel like, given the problems that are going on in the United States and some of the other places in the world, and, you know, they don't want to be forgotten. And I don't get that feeling that we are, but necessarily I concern myself because, you know, recently we had that significant loss of life. 30 special operations forces were killed, to include some SEALs, in that helicopter crash, and that made stateside news. But, you know, there are soldiers over here that get killed, and they don't get the same kind of coverage because it wasn't such a big event. And I think that, you know, that has a tendency to, I think, to make the individual soldier, sailor, service member, Marine, airman over here just kind of think about that, like, you know, and it touches them personally because they lose a friend, they lose somebody in a unit, and there's absolutely no news about it back home. There's a plain sight ceremony. The soldier's remains are escorted back, goes to a family, and there's no news coverage. Whereas a significant loss of life such as that incident, I believe it was August 6th, you know, that makes people wonder. And so I think that's kind of what drives this idea of, hey, are they forgetting about us unless something really bad happens? But every day I see great examples of people that are really excited about what they're doing here, and they want to do the right things, and they want to help train Afghanis and turn this mission really fully over to them. And you know, I would just ask that before people make a judgment, you know, that they try to make a really fully informed decision on what they're seeing and what they're hearing over here, because I don't necessarily know that we're getting the proper coverage, and that oftentimes, even in the Afghani press, from what I see, is they're only covering the suicide bomber that happens over here or something like that. And you know, one of the it's actually a frightening statistic that I saw before I came over here. There's three times as many people killed in Mexico, civilians, than there are here in Afghanistan, which is fairly frightening to me, having visited Mexico, but also knowing it's right there along the border, that actually Afghanistan is a safer place to be right now than Mexico.